for argument this morning is United States against Del Valle and Sanchez. Ms. Munoz.
Good morning. My name is Karen Munoz, and I represent the co-defendant, Aaron Del Valle, in this case. And the question we present to the court today is whether the court erred when it failed to sever Aaron Del Valle's one count of perjury from that of his co-defendant, Alfred Sanchez.
Well, by the way, what is your client's name?
Aaron Del Valle.
Yeah. I ask that because the parties don't agree on what his name is, right? You spell it D-E-L space cap V. And the prosecutor spells it D-E-L, no space, lowercase v. It presumably is one of these names or the other. I would be interested in knowing which.
The former judge. Space.
Do we have a sample of his signature in the record?
Likely in the sentencing, or I could find it and supplement the record.
Okay, well, I didn't want to distract you unduly, but it's puzzling when, in addition to all the standard legal disagreements, the litigants can't even agree on the name of the litigant.
If I may continue.
Please.
The issue is whether or not the court erred when it failed to sever Aaron Del Valle's case from that of his co-defendant, Alfred Sanchez, who was charged with two counts of mail fraud. Ultimately, Del Valle was charged with perjury, one count. And we respectfully urge the court to consider whether or not that failure resulted in prejudice to Mr. Del Valle, actual prejudice. Pursuant to Rule 14, a court can order separate trials if it appears that prejudice will result to a co-defendant. And in this case, actual prejudice existed. One of the grounds for severance that existed was the spillover evidence. There was testimony regarding the intergovernmental agency of which Mr. Del Valle was not a part of. This trial lasted 8 days and presented over 25 witnesses. There was testimony regarding sham interviews and many other things in which Aaron Del Valle was not implicated in. And it's our contention that the disparity in the evidence against his co-defendant and himself did not allow the jurors to make an independent assessment of guilt against Mr. Del Valle. He was a small player in this conspiracy that was alleged, and because of that, his trial should have been severed. Although the court did give limiting instructions, there's no way to know if the jurors adequately followed that, given the testimony that was presented against Mr. Sanchez and against Mr. Del Valle. And the jury could have easily subconsciously associated guilt between both defendants. Although Mr. Del Valle is not entitled to a perfect trial, here the weight of the evidence ensured that he did not receive a fair trial. And just briefly, the issue that's raised in the government's brief has to do with waiver. It's our position that Mr. Del Valle diligently pursued his motions for severance in both trials and did not waive his motion for severance, even if it wasn't raised at the close of the government's evidence in the second trial. And there's case law to support that when a defendant diligently pursues it, in this case, we believe that it would have been futile to bring it back up again. He has not waived the issue. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Boykin.
May it please the court. We are asking this court to review, reconsider, and overrule its decision in Sorich, a very similar case based on essentially the same alleged fraud in patronage hiring for city jobs. The Sorich case was bigger, involving more defendants.
Also, suppose we were to say that, okay, jobs are not property, but money is property, And the nature of this fraud was getting the wrong people in the job. The city pays out its money, but it doesn't get what it's paying for. It's like any other kind of contracting fraud. The city wants to get good concrete for the roads. It gets bad concrete. It's been deprived of its money or property because it's not getting what it's paying for. And that seems to be the nature of this allegation. The city wants people who have qualifications A, B, and C. It doesn't get them, so it's not getting what it's paying for. And that sounds like an ordinary claim that the city is being deprived of its money.
It's not, Judge, and here's why. The evidence in this case was overwhelming that the employees who were hired through at least Sanchez's role in the scheme were very well qualified, very hardworking, and the city got exactly what it's paid for, if not more.
Your answer is like saying you couldn't have a mail fraud claim based on the bad concrete until the concrete that didn't meet the specs, until the road actually collapsed, as, of course, the Dan Ryan did some years ago for this very reason. Right? Until then, you would say, well, the road is still working. It's true it didn't meet the specs, but it's still holding up. But I would think the bad concrete case is perfectly straightforward. And here the claim is these employees didn't meet the specs. The city had particular criteria, and instead of following those criteria, Mr. Sanchez did something else.
Judge, there is no evidence that the employees did not meet the specs. They did meet the specs. What was fraudulent was that the jobs were awarded because of the political work that the people had also done. And I would say that your example also would run afoul of McNally, at least the example of where there is no
deprivation. My example would run afoul of McNally, goodness.
Right. And here's why.
That's core mail fraud under current law.
In McNally, your example with my caveat that the people actually did meet the qualifications, and the distinction is that they did political work, and that's why they got hired. McNally says that there has to be a deprivation of money or property.
Yeah.
And in McNally, state employees picked insurance companies so that they could get kickbacks from that insurance company. They didn't meet the specs. They don't know whether they met the specs or not, because the jury was not required to find that they could have gotten the same insurance for less money or better insurance for the same amount of money. That's the difference. There is no either actual or intended deprivation of money or property. In McNally, the people took $800,000 in kickbacks, and they didn't care whether the insurance company met the specs or not. They wanted their kickbacks. But because the jury was not required to find that they intended to give substandard insurance or overpriced insurance, the Supreme Court said there's no deprivation of money or property. Recently in Skilling, which overruled about three-quarters of the Sorich opinion, the Supreme Court gave a hypothetical regarding McNally, which makes the point even clearer. I submit the government is even a little farther off base, which I'll explain in a second. But Sorich rejected the argument that if and they did that based on a case, United States versus Leahy. They rejected the argument that if the schemers intend for the city to get the full value of their contract and intend for the work to be done and for the work to be done well and pursuant to the contract, then there is no deprivation of money or property. The hypothetical was a corrupt mayor takes a kickback.
I just don't get it. If you take my concrete hypothetical, the city specifies that concrete has to have attributes A, B, and C. The defrauder who provides concrete that meets criteria A and B but not C will always testify that I intended the city to get the benefit of the bargain. I didn't think C was really important. But whether C is important is for the buyer to decide, not some third party. Right? I don't see how the buyer can say, how the vendor, fraudulent vendor, can say, I just think C is unimportant, so let's ignore it, and claim that the city didn't lose its money. You're making the same kind of argument, right? The city's got particular criteria. They aren't really important. Hiring people in different ways is just as good, so the city isn't losing anything. Well, it's the city that's in charge of deciding how it wants to hire employees.
I suspect in your hypothetical, Judge, the government would present evidence that the concrete in
question... No, I bet it wouldn't. It would not be asking the jury to decide questions of engineering. It would just be saying, or ought to be saying, here are the three things the city wanted, and as a result of fraud, it got two of them, and so it was paying on terms that it didn't agree to.
They would be attempting to prove, I believe, that they didn't get what they paid for. Here, the city got exactly what they paid for. Garbage men who went out every day and hauled the trash and showed up every day. That's what they paid for, and that's what they got. What they didn't get is garbage men who were hired free from political influence. And that's not a tangible property right. It's not an intangible property right either. It is what the courts have called an ethereal right. It's the right to honest services. In the Supreme Court's hypothetical, they want insurance companies who aren't paying kickbacks to the mayor, because otherwise they could get the insurance cheaper because the kickback wouldn't have to be paid, or the city would say, well, put the kickback in the city coffers, not in the mayor's pocket. But because there was no intent to cause an actual deprivation of money or property, it's not honest service, it's not traditional mail fraud. That scenario is honest services mail fraud because there's a kickback or a bribe to the mayor. The government, because of this distinction where what they're really doing is prosecuting honest services mail fraud as traditional money fraud, what they've come up with is saying things like the defendant interfered with the city's money, wrongfully interfered with the city's money. That's not a deprivation of money or property. I don't really, frankly, know what interfering with the city's money means. I guess what they mean is they gave it to not the exact kind of worker that they intended to give it to. But they certainly got the work that they were paying for. I see that I'm hitting my rebuttal time, and I'll reserve my 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, counsel. Mr. Shaw.
Good morning, and may it please the court. This court should not overrule Sorich. The scheme in this case was to deceive the city of Chicago into spending millions of dollars based on hundreds, if not thousands, of lies that were told to the city about the applicants that were applying for city jobs. This was core pecuniary fraud, and Sorich was correctly decided on that score. The applicants did not meet the specs because the city required a certification that
You must concede it is a little problematic to describe the property as the jobs. The city doesn't own jobs. It doesn't pay jobs. It pays money. It pays salary in exchange for work. But a job isn't something somebody owns, right?
I think that's right, Judge. And the evidence in this trial was about the salaries.
About money, yeah.
It's about money. Oh, there's evidence that a career service laborer costs the city $70,000 a year. The wages earned by a lamp maintenance man was $24.41 an hour. That is what the city is spending for its employees. Even the defense, in cross-examining one of the witnesses, pointed out that the city is spending all of our tax dollars on these employees. That's what this scheme was about. It was about taking control of the city's fisc and taking that money and giving it to other people based on lies. It was core fraud. The terms of the bargain were, in fact, altered by this shadow hiring process. The applicant with clout had a much better bargain than the applicant without clout, and that was the fraud here in this case. This falls well within the narrow construction of property that's been upheld on several occasions, and there's no reason to revisit it here. With respect to Mr. Duvalier's severance argument, I'll simply say that the district court considered the joint trial, the evidence against the two defendants, found that there was significant overlap. In order to prove Mr. Duvalier's perjury, the government was going to have to prove a substantial chunk of the fraud against Mr. Sanchez. Many witnesses overlapped. The jury was instructed that they should consider the two defendants separately and the evidence about the two different offenses, mail fraud and perjury, separately. So there was no abuse of discretion in denying the severance. Unless the court has any further questions, we'd rest on our brief and ask the court to affirm the judgment below. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have an answer to my initial question to Ms. Munoz?
The government throughout the investigation had spelled Mr. Duvalier's name as one word. There are plenty of instances of his name. There are plenty of instances of his name in the record. His personnel file is in the record, Your Honor. I would have to look at his city personnel file, which is in
the
record.
How did the city of Chicago list
him? I'm sorry, Your Honor.
How did the city of Chicago address him?
Again, I think his personnel file would have the answer to that question, and I'm happy to...
That's what we're talking, the personnel file for the city.
It's the personnel file for the city of Chicago.
You might have checked his internal revenue responses, too. He might give his real name there.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Munoz, anything further?
Briefly, Your Honors, not all of the evidence would have been admissible in the trial against Mr. Del Valle had he been tried separately. He was lumped in with the government's pursuit of this shadow hiring practices, and overwhelming part of that evidence he had nothing to do with. By not having a separate trial, he was actually prejudiced. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Blagan, anything further?
The jury instruction regarding money or property told the jury that money and property includes city jobs or promotions. So if one of the court's questions is why are we focusing on whether jobs are property? Because the reason we're focusing on that is because that's what the jury was instructed in that way. So if jobs are not property, if city jobs are not money or property, if money is just money, well, then there's a faulty jury instruction, which we alleged in our opening brief. One of the other key problems with Sorich, and I think with Mr. Shah's analysis of this issue, is federalism. The government believes that federalism should only be looked at if there is an ambiguity about whether something is property. Now, our position is here, clearly, there's an ambiguity about whether jobs are property. But what you're left with now is a falsified resume sent through the mail to get a city job is federal mail fraud. It's traditional mail fraud. Lying about on your residency requirement is traditional mail fraud. And all of those things are covered by a wide array of municipal and state laws, including felony convictions carrying jail time. This, similar to Cleveland, this is a situation where the court ought to say, look, this is already well regulated by local authorities and by the state. And traditional mail fraud is not meant to step on the toes of local government. And that's, frankly, what is going on here. The city inspector general currently runs around chasing people to see if they live in the suburbs or the city. Now we could have FBI agents and U.S. attorneys doing that, because under the government's theory of what represents mail fraud, a lie on a job application is mail fraud. And there is a case from another circuit, Granberry, which Sorich relied on, where, in fact, a bus driver gets a job by lying on his application. He gets convicted of federal traditional mail fraud. Cleveland, the Supreme Court's case, saying that federalism should be viewed in all contexts, not just when there's some ambiguity, which would counsel that in this circumstance, the local and state government's authority ought to trump the federal authority. Mr. Shaw said that the applicants did not meet the specs. They didn't try to prove otherwise, that the applicants did not meet the specs. And the defense did prove that the people did meet the specs. That these are good jobs, they're high paying jobs, but the main requirement is attendance, you know, the ability to carry 30 pounds or more, showing up where you're supposed to and working hard. These are not positions where you have to have a degree in something or have any technical knowledge. These are trash throwing positions. That's what Al Sanchez had a little bit of sway over. Who would get to throw the trash out? And the government has turned that into a federal mail fraud prosecution by improperly suggesting that he intended to deprive the city of money or property when he did not intend to deprive the city of anything. Frankly, what he was trying to do is get minorities in the city. Thank you.
Ms. Munoz, the court appreciates your willingness to accept the appointment in this case and your assistance to the court as well as your client. The case is taken under advisement.